Welcome to the Buckhead Church Podcast. At Buckhead Church, we are for Atlanta because we believe that God is for Atlanta. And these days, it's more important than ever to be known by what we're for. And we hope this podcast helps you in your life and faith. We want to help you find greater hope with fewer regrets because we are for you. If it's your first time with us, head over to buckheadchurch.org/new so we can meet you and send you a free For Atlanta gift on us. If you're not already receiving weekly emails from us, make sure to head to our website, scroll to the bottom, click Stay Informed, and sign up today. The best way to keep up with everything going on is to follow us on social media, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and download our free Buckhead Church app. But most importantly, I hope the following episode inspires you to take the next step forward in your faith journey this week. Enjoy.
Before we dive into week one, I want to say hey to the churches that are with us today. And first of all, hey there, Buckhead Church. It is so great to see you again. I love this church so, so much. And it's hard to believe 15 years ago, Wendy and I joined the early days of Buckhead Church. This is when we were meeting over at the Doubletree every other Sunday. Some of you were there. And Andy makes this joke that it was great back in the days because some people would go left to the church or right to the bar over at Doubletree. And sometimes we wondered if some people went right before they came left, right? So then after that, we moved over to the grocery store, Roswell Road. Some of you remember those days. And the reason I bring that up is when we were over at the grocery store in Roswell Road, there was a group of people that drove up from Peachtree City every Sunday at 11 o'clock. Then they would go to lunch and they would say, do you think we could start a church like this in Peachtree City? Well, fast forward to today, I want to say hey to those people. And it's now a large group of people with multiple light locations. Southside Church in Peachtree City. I can remember you guys driving up to the grocery store and look at you now. It's a phenomenal story that what you're doing over down in Peachtree City. And then also the cool thing about Buckhead Church is if you got on Peachtree Road here and went 30 minutes north, you'd run into another great church. Gwinnett Church, it's just 30 minutes from here, or with Atlanta traffic, 7.5 hours. So I want to say hey to Gwinnett Church and excited about tonight at Gwinnett Church. We're going to be at Hamilton Mill, groundbreaking our second Gwinnett Church location at 6 o'clock tonight. So I hope to see you there. So Peachtree, Southside, Buckhead, Gwinnett, I'm so honored to be able to kick off this series. And so what I want to do, since this is part one of a series, I want to give you an overview of where we're going over the next few weeks. Then we're going to dive in to week one. So to give you an overview of the series, I want to take you back to 6 years ago. 6 years ago, a couple of friends of mine went to visit another friend of ours, Michael Lage. He was working in California for a company called Facebook. Maybe you've heard of them. And so when we were touring Facebook, I actually took this picture of this place. It was called The Hacker. I was so fascinated by this because it was on this road there at Facebook headquarters called Hacker Way. And I asked Michael, what is that building and why do you call it The Hacker? And he says, oh, that's where we have our hackathons. And I said, okay, my next question, what is a hackathon? I had no idea what that is. He goes, well, a hackathon is when we get engineers and our team together and we don't talk, we don't have a meeting. We sit in this room and we actually come up with a practical application and we don't leave the room until we can apply it to the business. And he began to mention all these ideas that Facebook had now implemented because they got in a room and hacked their way to a new idea. So hacking refers to this. Hacking refers to building and applying a new way for better results. This was a new definition to the word hack for me because I thought hack just referred to my golf game. So this was a completely different perspective on hacking for me. Now, this isn't just true for business. It also is true for you and me. There are some hacks in our lives that we can build and apply in our lives that will help make our lives even better. Another word for this is this word, the word Proverbs. Now, Proverbs, what does proverb mean? We introduce what hacking is. Well, what does Proverbs mean? Well, a proverb is a saying that conveys a specific truth. I love this, in a pointed, pithy way. Or another definition of Proverbs is this. Proverbs are short sentences drawn from long experience. I love that. So there's a book in the Bible called the Book of Proverbs. And it's amazing because it has sentence after sentence about different areas in life. It could be relationships, finances, work, relationship with God. All of these very, very practical life hacks, if you will. And let me give you an example of this. So 7.5 years ago, we were here. My family was here. I was on staff here at Buckhead Church. We were loving it. Some of our dearest and deepest and most wonderful memories were in this church. But at this time, 7.5 years ago, North Point was thinking about launching a church in Gwinnett County. Well, Wendy and I are from Gwinnett County. I graduated from high school in Gwinnett. She graduated from high school in Gwinnett. Her family had a lot of years in Gwinnett. My family had a lot of years in Gwinnett. In fact, my dad pastored a church in Norcross. So when this opportunity came about and I was presented with this opportunity, it was a really difficult decision. We love it here, but this was an opportunity to launch a church like this in our home county. So we began to understand that there is a life hack in the book of Proverbs that we could use. And if we hacked this verse, if you will, and applied it in our lives and in this decision-making, we believed it would help us make the best decision possible. And here is that life hack. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 22. It says, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. So Wendy and I decided this. If we're going to make this decision to leave Buckhead and go help start a new church, let's try to get as many advisors as we possibly can. So that's exactly what we did. In fact, there are people in this room right now who helped us do that. They're here at Buckhead Church. There are many mentors. I sat down with Andy. I sat down with my parents. I sat down with my in-laws. I even sat down with my in-laws people. We got all these people together and we said, hey, will you look at this decision? Because we believe this is a great application for life. We don't want to do this. We don't want to fail for lack of counsel, but we want to put ourselves in the best possible decision. So we got many advisors to help us make this decision. Now, here's the cool thing about this. Wherever you may be in your spiritual journey, at Southside, Gwinnett, or Buckhead, whatever you may believe about the Bible, God, and Jesus, here, all that's important, but if we could just set that aside just for a second, you can glean and benefit from the book of Proverbs wherever you may be on your spiritual journey. So what we're going to do over the next 3 weeks is we're going to take a life hack from the book of Proverbs and to see and understand what the book of Proverbs has to say so that, and just let you know my perspective, the next 3 Sundays, it's not necessarily a church service. This is a hackathon. We're going to get in a room. We're going to look at this. We're going to look at some verses. We're going to hack these verses together, build an application so that you and I can go apply this into our lives. And why is that important? I believe when you see where we're going in this series, if we will apply these life hacks into our lives, it will not only be a gift to us, but it will also be a gift to the people in our lives. Now, before I introduce life hack number one, I want to give us a little bit of perspective on who wrote most of the book of Proverbs, because I think this will help give you some credibility or help give the book of Proverbs some credibility if you're not familiar with it. The guy that wrote most of the book of Proverbs is a man named Solomon, King Solomon. And the interesting thing about Solomon is he took over as king of Israel when he was a young guy. But not only that, he took over for a legend. He was following a legend, and that legend was his father, King David. David of David and Goliath. And David was a rock star. He was a legend. He was a warrior. He was a king. He was a poet. He was a dancer. He was a writer. He was amazing. So imagine Solomon, as his dad passes on, he now has those shoes to fill. And naturally, there's some insecurity that would bubble up in any person, I would think. Well, I think God looks at this situation and felt empathetic for Solomon. So one night, Solomon has a dream. And in the dream, God comes to him and says, Solomon, I will give you whatever it is that you want. Because I think, again, God was thinking, this poor guy, I don't know if God says bless his heart, but we say that in the South, bless his heart. Look at him. He's got to follow this legend. I want to help him. So ask me anything you want, and I'll give it to you. Well, again, this is a dream, and Solomon says, well, the main thing that I would want is for you to give me wisdom and understanding to lead your people. I'm a young guy. I don't have any experience doing this. I mean, look at my dad. I mean, I'm kind of overwhelmed with this task. Can you give me the wisdom and understanding I need to lead your people? Well, the story goes on to say that God is well pleased with that answer. So pleased that God says this. He says, Solomon, not only am I going to give you that, I'm going to bestow upon you the wisdom, the likes of which the world has not yet seen. I'm also going to give you everything that you could have asked for. In other words, Solomon, great answer. All right, great answer. You got the best of both worlds. And then Solomon wakes up. Have you ever had a dream that took you a few minutes to wonder whether that was real or not? I think that's what Solomon was thinking. Is this really real? Well, shortly after that, there's this big commotion that breaks out in the palace. And this large group of people come in, and there are two women, and they're fighting over this newborn baby. Both of them are claiming that this newborn baby is theirs. This, as you know, is before the days of DNA testing. So they're like, how do they figure this out, right? So they decide, let's take it to the king. We can't figure it out. So they bring these two ladies and this little baby before the king, and they explain the situation, and here's what Solomon says. He says, bring me a sword. Excuse me? He goes, yes, bring me a sword. So they bring the king a sword. He goes, hand me the baby. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cut the baby in half. I'm going to give half of the baby to you. I'm going to give the other half of the baby to you. That way you'll both have a part of this baby. Well, this mom over here goes, that's a great idea, king. Awesome. Love it. Here's the baby. This mom over here says, no. Oh, king, she can have the baby. Whatever you do, oh, king, I beg of you, please don't harm this baby. She can have the baby. And Solomon looks at this mom and says, give the baby to her. She is the real mother. And everybody cheers. But at some point, I have to imagine, you know, I wasn't there that day, but I have to imagine that at some point, they all kind of looked up to Solomon and went, whoa. I mean, with all due respect, oh, king, there, that was a move. That was wisdom. That was understanding. We couldn't figure it out. And then in a couple of minutes, you figured it all out. That's an otherworldly wisdom. And the words, the word of Solomon's wisdom began to spread and spread and spread. People came, kings and queens came from miles around just to be at his feet because the reputation of his wisdom began to grow. But I think one of the people who was most surprised about this was Solomon himself. I think he realized that day, oh my goodness, it wasn't a dream. It was real. In fact, the only way I can describe it is I think Solomon felt the same way as Peter Parker did when he realized he was Spider-Man. Like, I can climb walls now, people. That's amazing. And Solomon's going, oh my goodness, there's this wisdom that's just coming out of me. And so what he ends up doing, he ends up just writing all this wisdom down. And many of you have that wisdom in your homes. In fact, the cool thing about the book of Proverbs, there's a friend of mine, tomorrow morning, he's the CEO, he's still the CEO of today, but tomorrow morning he'll wake up to be the CEO of a multi-billion dollar organization. And the way he will begin his day is by reading a chapter from the book of Proverbs. Why does he do that? Here's why he does this, and this is what he told me. He said, Jeff, I need as much wisdom as I possibly can get. The wisdom from the book of Proverbs has counseled business leaders and kings and queens and parents and teachers and spouses and sons and daughters for centuries now. And that's what we're going to lean into in this series called Life Hacks. That's why we're doing this series called Life Hacks. Now, having said that as an overview, what I want to do next is transition into part one of life hacks number one, and I want to share with you what this first life hack is. I'm excited about this, but I'm also a little nervous about this, and here's why I'm nervous. When I show you this life hack, no one's going to email me and say, I can't believe we talked about this at church. No one's going to disagree with this. We're all on board with this life hack. The problem, though, is that it's a little vanilla. And so let me share with you, give you a visual representation of where we're going today. To do that, I want to use some ice cream, and not just any ice cream. Any Jenny's ice cream fans in the house? Yeah, I mean, you got to love Jenny's. Now, I remember hearing about Jenny's, and I was thinking, you know what? I mean, I'm sure it's great, but how much better can Jenny's ice cream be? And then I had this one, Brambleberry Crisp. Has anybody had this? This will change your life, people. I'm telling you. Southside Gwinnett, this will change your life. So there's Brambleberry Crisp, but there's all these exotic flavors. There's like lemon buttermilk, goat cheese cherry. There's all these exotic flavors. So when you ask Jenny's fans, what is your favorite flavor? They mention one of these exotic flavors. But what no one ever really mentions is, oh, my favorite? Vanilla. Got to rock the vanilla, right? So no one rocks the vanilla, all right? When you see where we're going today, you're going to instantly kind of think maybe, you know what, Jeff? I mean, yeah, but do we really need to spend a Sunday talking about that? This is a little bit vanilla. So what I want to share with you is this life hack number one. If you'll give me a couple of minutes, I want to present the case to you that it's not so vanilla. It's really Brambleberry Crisp. So here's life hack number one. Life hack number one, integrity. Integrity. See, nobody's going to email me and go, "How? I don't believe in integrity. How dare you talk about this in church?" What we think is, well, yeah, we're all on board with this. Do we really need to spend a whole Sunday talking about integrity? It's a little bit vanilla, Jeff. Do we really need to talk about integrity? But here's why I want to spend some time about integrity. Integrity is not vanilla when a lack of integrity shows up on the news. Integrity is not vanilla when you have to sit down with your family and your children and explain that a decision that you've made has now impacted their life. And a lack of integrity is not vanilla when financial creditors sit down and tell you that they now have decision-making power over your finances. Integrity isn't so vanilla after all. And so what I want to talk about today is the power of integrity. But the other thing that you need to realize right now is that my hands are freezing, okay? So I actually want to give some ice cream away to somebody on the front row. How about that? Oh, I think we have a young lady right there, Jim, that wants it. They were raising. We got spoons for you. You don't have to share, but I think Jesus would. And then also, Southside and Gwinnett, I would like to toss this through the screen, but we haven't worked out the technology, but we have some volunteers that are going to give some away at your campuses as well. Okay, so hang with me. Why is integrity Brambleberry Crisp and not so vanilla? Well, in preparation for our time together today, I did a one-man survey to ask people their definition of integrity, because we all believe in integrity. I said, okay, great, you believe integrity. What do you think integrity means? Here's the first word I heard. Well, that's a good question. And then we would stammer around a little bit and go, well, and then the word honesty would come up, and then character, and then eventually someone would start preaching a sermon. But we need people with integrity, right? And what I realized is that while we believe in integrity, we don't really have a good definition for it. And when you don't have a good definition for it, it's kind of hard to apply it and benefit in our lives. The other reason that this is a problem, that we really don't have a good definition of integrity, is when it comes to integrity, you hear this all the time. We need leaders to have integrity. We need business leaders to have integrity. We need political leaders to have integrity. We want to marry spouses who have integrity. We want our kids to have integrity. But here's the challenge with that, and I think it underlines the fact that we really don't have maybe the best understanding of integrity. When it comes to integrity, integrity isn't something you have. Integrity isn't something that you have. And I think this underlies when we say we want people to have integrity, that we have a faulty, maybe not well thought out definition of what integrity is. And you can't benefit from it if we don't have a great definition for it. So what I want to do today is I want to give you the best definition that I've found of when it comes to integrity. Several years ago, actually, when I was on staff here at Buckhead Church, I read a book called Integrity by Dr. Henry Cloud, and here was his definition of integrity, which I love. He says, integrity is the courage to meet the demands of your reality. Integrity is the courage to meet the demands of your reality. What this means is that you and I have to understand our reality. So let me ask us some questions. What is your financial reality right now? What is the reality of your marriage? What is the reality of a particular relationship? What's your work or career reality? What's the reality of your relationship with God? What is your current reality? As Andy would say, what you're in essence doing is you're taking the rock and turning the rock over and seeing all the squiggly things underneath it. That's the first thing. But what integrity demands is that once you pull that rock up, that you meet the demands of whatever that reality may be. This is why integrity isn't so vanilla. Integrity is Brambleberry Crisp. It's going to have a very powerful impact on your life, but it will require this. It's not so vanilla. This is why when it comes to integrity, integrity isn't something you have. Integrity is something you apply. What we want to have in this world is more leaders, more people who are applying this than just talking this. Because integrity isn't something you have. Integrity is something you apply. So what that leads us to is this, the integrity test. Remember, this is a hackathon today. What we're doing is we're going to get a verse in just a second. I'm going to show you this. I got one verse today. We're going to hack this verse and have some different applications in it. But the integrity test is this, it's a question. Where do you need to apply courage to meet the demands of your reality? Where do you need to apply courage to meet the demands of your reality? And let me say this, Southside, Gwinnett, Buckhead, I believe there's some really good things going on in your life right now. And there's probably some challenging things going on in your life right now. No one is perfect. This is why this question is an all skate. In fact, if you're here today and you'd say, well, Jeff, I don't have to, I'm perfect. Well, here's the cool thing about you. You don't have to come back next week. You don't have to come back to church ever. You are perfect. But the only thing I would ask you is to ask the people in your life if they think you are perfect. And then we'll see you next Sunday, okay? So where do you need to apply courage to meet the demands of your reality? So here's what we're gonna do in our remaining time. We're gonna, remember, this is a hackathon. We're gonna put this verse on a table. We're gonna put a microscope and a light on it, and we're gonna look at one verse in four different perspectives. All right, here's the verse, just one verse, but we're gonna go deep and dissect this verse and look at it in different ways. This is what Solomon wrote in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 3. He says, the integrity, there's our word, the integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity. So what I want to do, I want to put this verse under the microscope and look at four areas of integrity. First is work. The second is relational. The third is financial. And the fourth is spiritual. And here's what I think. I think maybe not all four of these will apply, but my hunch is that there's at least one Southside, there's at least one Gwinnett, and there's at least one Buckhead Church that we could use some work in. And that's, when we do this, when we apply integrity to one of these areas, it's gonna be hard, that's the courage part, but it will benefit you and the people in your life. So let's put this verse under the microscope and let's get to work. The first one is work integrity. And as I look at this verse, as it relates to the perspective of work, I thought of this word. This word just kind of bubbled up to me as I thought about this work and a verse and I prayed through this verse. And it's not necessarily don't steal money from the company. That's true. We shouldn't steal money from the company, but I think it's deeper than that. And as I prayed through this verse, I remembered a story that Jesus told. There was a business story that Jesus told. And by the way, we shouldn't be surprised that Jesus is telling business stories. He actually spent more time in the marketplace as a carpenter and carpenter's son than he did as a rabbi. So Jesus told a lot of marketplace stories and parables to illustrate his teachings. He told this great business story in Luke 16, but then the moral of the story, the punch of the story, the end of the story, the conclusion was this. Luke 16, verse 10 ties to this. He says, if you are faithful in little things, you'll be faithful in large ones. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important for lots of different reasons. But when I talk to people who are struggling, going through some struggles or thinking of a career transition, and they say, Jeff, you know, I'm grateful I have a job, but I don't really like my job. I don't really like the situation I'm in. I don't really like that. And we'll go through that. We'll talk about their skills and gifts and future hopes and dreams, all of that. But at the end of the meeting, I'll say this. I'll say, now, here's the most important thing that you can do. The most important thing that you can do is apply work integrity and go back tomorrow or this afternoon to your place of employment and do the very, very, very best job you can do. And often I'll hear this. I'll hear, Jeff, have you been paying attention at all? I don't like it there. I don't like the job. I don't like the work situation. And I say, I totally understand that. But if you're not faithful where you are, it very rarely leads you to where you want to be. I say it this way, that the pathway to your dream job often leads through your day job. That you can't be unfaithful here and expect that unfaithfulness will lead you here. You gotta be faithful in the small things right where you are. My dad used to say it this way. He would say, son, be faithful in the small things. God's paying attention. Be faithful in the small things, God's paying attention. So I would tell people when you go to work tomorrow and you're faithful and you're doing all of that you can possibly do, I think God's looking down and saying, look at her, look at him. Not very crazy about this situation, kind of struggling, but he or she, they're doing their very, very best. That is work integrity. So what is a life hack as it relates to this? Well, let me give you some ideas. All right, show up on time. For some people, this is a revolutionary idea right here. Excuse me, show up on time. Yeah, show up on time, right? Show up on time, be ready for the meeting. Excellence matters. Be open to feedback. Ask, how am I doing around here? And don't be defensive. Go beyond what is expected of you. Go the second mile. Go beyond what is expected of you and be faithful where you are and who you are working currently for. If you do this, these are ways to be faithful in the small things. And according to Jesus, whoever is faithful in the small things can be trusted with larger ones. Now, this is a really important deal for God. Don't forget, you know what the purpose of your life at work is? The purpose of your life at work is to show that God is at work in your life. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're blaring out worship songs in the cubicle tomorrow or putting Bible verses at the water cooler. No, what you're doing is you're doing all of this to go, you know what? I want to honor God right where I am. I'm going to face the current reality, and I'm going to be on time. I'm going to have excellence. I'm going to be open to feedback, go beyond what is expected of me. I'm going to be faithful where I am because I believe, God, you're paying attention. And I could share with you story after story after story of how people who were faithful where they are and were led them to what they are doing today. That's work integrity. Now, that may not be you. That's okay. We got three more. The second one is relational integrity. Relational integrity. Now, I think this one is an all skate, all right? But I could be wrong. So we're going to put this verse under a relationship microscope. And as we do, there's another verse that bubbles up, and it's this word, duplicity. Now, just like we said that we needed to define integrity, we also need to define duplicity. What is Solomon meaning when he says the integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity? Well, we need to have a working definition for duplicity. So if you Google duplicity on the internet, here's what you hear the definition of. Duplicity is a 2009 romantic comedy starring Julia Roberts and Clive Owens, all right? This isn't what I believe Solomon was getting at. So what we need to do is come up with some synonyms. What are some synonyms for duplicity that would help us understand it? Well, here are some synonyms for duplicity. Deceit, double dealing. Look at these other words. Dishonesty, chicanery, not Sean Connery, chicanery, trickery. Look at this word, skullduggery, right? Monkey business. These are relationship words. No one wants this said at their funeral. Here's some other words, though, the opposite, antonyms of duplicity. Candidness, honesty, straightforwardness, trustworthiness, directness. We do want these words said. Now, here's the challenge, though. To get there, we're going to have to put our relationships under the microscope, and we're going to have to do some work, not about the people in our lives. We're going to have to do some work on ourselves. Have you ever tried to change the people in your life? How's that worked? Does it work? Thank you very much. The only person that you really have control of changing is you. So I want to give you a relationship question. Now, just so you know, I preached on this question here at Buckhead Church 7 years ago, all right? But I want to resurface this question. It's a challenging question. It's a question of relational integrity, but it can help you and the people in your life. Here's the question I want you to ask somebody. The question is this. What's it like to be on the other side of me? What's it like to be on the other side of me? Because we have never been on the other side of us. And I want to encourage you, challenge you, triple dog dare you to ask one person this week, maybe the person you're sitting with today, this question. And when you do, you're going to get three pieces of information. The first piece of information you're going to get is some encouraging feedback. They're going to encourage you. The second piece of information you're going to get is some surprising information about yourself that you were not aware of. And the third piece of information is you're going to get your feelings hurt. That's what's going to happen. That's why this requires courage. That's why relational integrity is the courage to meet the demands of that relationship. But let me push this a little bit. If you and I will not have the courage to ask this question, there is information that's still there. It doesn't go away. It doesn't evaporate. We just don't have the courage to go after it. And if we don't have the courage to go after it, we cannot say that we are a person of integrity, at least it relates to that relationship. And the challenge with duplicity is more often than not, I think sometimes duplicity is unintentional. We don't know that we are doing it. In fact, let me put the synonyms back. What if we were just unintentionally deceitful? What if on the other side of us, it's just we're doing this and we don't know it? Well, one of the things that you have to do is to become more emotionally aware. What's it like to be on the other side of me? Now, the challenge for me is when I preached on this message, the people in my life took it and remembered it. And so they'll sit me down and go, well, Jeff, sit down. I'm going to tell you what it's like to be on the other side of you right now. I'm like, I didn't even ask the question. You preached on it. Here we go. So there we go. Now, this is challenging. It's convicting, but it's ultimately rewarding because it's going to help you And it'd be a gift to the people in your life. So, one person, what's it like to be on the other side of me? So this feels really convicting, so let's go to number three. Financial integrity. Financial integrity, the integrity of the upright guides them. When I put this under the microscope of finances, this word guide really surfaced. Because when you have someone who describes that, you know, they got out of financial debt, what they ultimately say is, I met a mentor, I had a plan, I followed a guide. You don't naturally drift toward financial freedom. In fact, we don't naturally drift toward health. No one says, you know what, I was just watching television one night and the next thing I knew, I was doing 100 push-ups. It was absolutely amazing. We don't say that. We don't drift toward health. We drift toward Jenny's ice cream, right? We don't drift toward broccoli. We drift toward ice cream. So you need a guide that will help you get to your financial freedom. So what is financial integrity? Well, financial integrity is having the courage to meet the demands of your current financial reality. So what is your financial reality? For many people, when the credit card bill comes in, they don't even look at it. They just write the minimum and send it on, thinking that if they don't look at it, the situation will get better. That rarely happens. Now, if you're a guy like me, and you're a pastor or preacher, and you start talking about money, people lose their minds, okay? Because it's like, there's the pastor talking about, you know, money, and the church just wants my money, and I get all that. And there are people like me who've abused their position. I get all that. But if we can set that aside just for a moment, when it comes to your Heavenly Father doesn't want something from you. He wants something for you. In fact, let me show you a quote. The quote says this: the biggest financial mistake I made is applying biblical principles to my finances. The biggest financial mistake I made is applying biblical principles to my finances. Do you know who said this? No one ever. No one says, you know what? When I started applying biblical principles to my finances, my credit card bills soared. Thankfully, the credit card company has come to save me. No one saves that. What you hear is story after story after story. When people understood a guide, a plan, a system to move forward, they hacked their way, if you will, toward financial freedom. That's why at our churches, we want to help you move toward that. Now, this may be a little bit different at your church, but let me show you a couple of financial systems that we could hack our way to financial freedom. Here's one, MoneyWise. We have many MoneyWise mentors in this room today. MoneyWise is where you sit down with a MoneyWise mentor. They look at your financial situation. They become a guide, Proverbs 11:3, and they develop a plan so that you can make steady progress toward financial freedom. Or very similar one is a small group environment called Financial Peace University. It's a small group environment we have at some of our campuses. So here's what I want to encourage you to do. Buckhead Church, I want you to go. If this is your area, I want you to go to the lobby today, to the care area, and ask about MoneyWise. Or Gwinnett Church, I want you to go and ask about Financial Peace University at the gallery. But wherever you may be, I just want to let you know our churches exist partly because we want to help you experience financial integrity. Because we don't want a creditor telling you what to do with your money. God doesn't want that. He doesn't want something from you. He wants something for you. So that's work integrity, that's relational integrity, and that's financial integrity. The last one is this, spiritual integrity. What is spiritual integrity? Well, as I put this verse again under the microscope, there's a word that came up in this word upright. Upright guides them. And don't let this word intimidate you. What this simply means, I believe, is a person who is intentional and they are growing in their faith with Jesus. We want to be churches who help you grow in your relationship with Jesus. And in fact, that's the ballgame. Our mission is this. Our mission is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus. And as I said earlier, if you're not growing, you're probably drifting. So as it relates to spiritual integrity, the question we want people to ask is, am I growing? And this is so cool. If you're here today for the first time or you've got questions, you have come to the right churches. We have a spiritual growth strategy that we think works. In fact, let me show you. We believe there are five things that grow your faith. There's probably more than five, but as we hear people's stories, these are the five that bubble up. Providential relationships, pivotal circumstances, private disciplines, personal ministry, and practical teaching. But of these five, there's three that we have the most control over, and that would be private disciplines, personal ministry, and practical teaching. But the two that I want to focus on are personal ministry and practical teaching. The first one I want to talk is to those of you who've been coming for a while. Maybe you come every so often, and God is an important part, but you know, not an consistent part. I want to encourage you to go to Starting Point. Today at Buckhead Church, we have a Starting Point orientation right after service downstairs in the gallery. I want you to go to Starting Point and just hear about it. It's just 10 minutes. Or you can go to the gallery at Gwinnett Church. Starting Point is an incredible environment because it's an opportunity. It's not a lecture. It's not a debate. It's an opportunity for you to meet some incredible people, open up the Bible, and just have questions and a dialogue about who Jesus is. And hey, I want us to have work integrity. I want us to have relational integrity. I want us to have financial integrity. But honestly, this is the most important one. You can have all that. If you miss out on this one, you miss out on forever. I want you to understand who Jesus is. That's why we've created Starting Point. The other opportunity is serving. And this is so important. This is personal ministry. Every one of our churches, Southside, Gwinnett, and Buckhead, we have an opportunity for you to have a personal ministry. And let me show you why this is so important. One of the things that grows your faith, as I mentioned, is practical teaching. But here's the challenge with not just our churches, but other churches. Practical teaching, you come in and you can kind of feed on the content, right? And I think we've got the best communicator in the world, and Andy Stanley, incredible incredible preacher. And so we just have this content after content after content. It's great. You should consume great content. It's practical teaching. It's one of the ways that grows your faith. That said, if this is all we do, we drift in and out, we consume and leave, consume and leave, consume and leave. When you consume and you leave, ultimately it leads to unhealth. If you consume and never exercise, it leads to unhealth. So what we need to do is not just take the napkin here, we need to take the napkin here and put it over our arm and serve people at Buckhead Church, at Gwinnett Church, and Southside Church. That's what many of you have already done today. You sat around carpet circles with students. You planted a seed in their heart that'll change their hearts forever. You parked cars because the sermon starts in the parking lot. You opened up your homes or apartments or condos this week to lead a small group. You are doing this. And when you do this, it grows your faith. But let me push some of us. Maybe you've been coming for a while and you're not doing this. You'll never, ever experience what the church can do for you until you experience what the church can do through you through personal ministry. Some of you, you've taken a break from serving, right? That was 8 years ago. I was the lead pastor here, all right? So now I'm back and I'm saying, hey, you know what? Break time is over. Let's put the towel on your arm and let's get to serving. So Gwinnett Church, for you, go to the gallery today and ask for personal ministry opportunities. Buckhead Church, go to the lobby outside, ask for personal ministry opportunities. Southside, you go to the studio, personal ministry opportunities. This is important for our churches, but it's also important for you as well. So all of that said, here's our challenge. Here's, again, this is a hackathon. The integrity challenge, select one area, work, relational, financial, spiritual. You define your reality. What is the reality? We take the rock up and we look at all the squiggly things, but we refuse to put it back down. We get to work. We tell someone today, that's why I'm pointing you to the outside here in the lobby for Buckhead or studio at Southside or gallery at Gwinnett. And together, define what needs to change. And when you do that, you will be applying, not just talking about, integrity. So again, what is integrity? Well, integrity is the courage to meet the demands of your reality. So which one of these do you want to focus on? Pray for God to give you that and see what he does through your faithfulness here. This is why this is such an important life hack. But here's the best news of all, I think. As you do this, you don't go alone. If you go to Starting Point orientation, you go out to the lobby, you go to the studio, you go to the gallery, what's, at least according to Solomon, there's someone else who goes with you. This is what Solomon wrote in Proverbs chapter 2. He, the Lord, is a shield to those who walk with integrity. God wants to be your shield as you open up that rock and look at all the squiggly things underneath. And ask him for the wisdom and the courage and the power for it to change. Now, if it seems like I'm a little stepping on your toes today, that's not my intent. What I want to do instead is to call you to higher ground. And let me explain this and I'm done. When I was growing up, when my dad disciplined me, and I know some of you who know me, I know that's a shock that my dad had to discipline me, but my dad disciplined me quite a bit. And before he disciplined me, he would say, "Jeffrey, I'm not disappointed in you. I'm disappointed you forgot who you are. We're Hendersons. We don't act this way. We don't treat people this way. And son, what I'm here to do is to remind you of who you are and what my job, one of my jobs as your father is to call you to higher ground." That's what my earthly father used to tell me. I believe the same applies to your heavenly father. I believe your heavenly father is calling and challenging you to higher ground, saying, "Look, I'm not disappointed in you. I believe in you. You are a son of the King of the universe. You're a daughter of the King of the universe. I'm calling you to higher ground. So let's get to work. And as you have the courage, know that I'm walking with you. And then in a few weeks, a few months, and definitely years, you're going to look back and see how I blessed your courage to meet the demands of your reality as you applied the life hack of integrity." Now, having said all of that, I'll close with this, quoting a very good friend of all of ours, Andy Stanley, who would say, "Now, everyone, it's your move." Have a great week.
Hey, once again, thanks for listening. If you're an Atlanta resident, I would love for you to attend one of our weekend gatherings at Buckhead Church. For directions, service times, and information about our fabulous children's and student environments, please visit us at buckheadchurch.org. That's buckheadchurch.org.